Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 41. Inconceivable states are not subject to material argumentation. The quality in inconceivability is that it is beyond the material realm. So by definition, you can't argue it because it's beyond the material realm. So how can you use something within the material realm to argue it? Right? So that makes sense. Something that's below can't understand what's above. Right? By the word bhava, states, in the plural, one should not think that the state of oneness has been discarded, since all these states are one in the Lord. Thus everything is clear. Right? So if you accept the achintabheda-veda tattva, the oneness, the difference, you can deal with both of them. Then you're able to actually understand things properly. Otherwise, then if you don't, it's either oneness or there's nothing. You know, there's no connection. Then it's not going to work. Okay, Adhikarana 6, oneness with the jiva. Bok triya patya dikaranam. Sutra reference 2.1.13. Adhikarana Prakashika. This Adhikarana addresses the aspect of simultaneous oneness and difference between the Lord and the Jiva. The difference between the Lord and the Jiva is already established by the Shrutis and previously in Vedanta Sutra 1.3.42 and 43. Shushup yu krantyor bhedena and patyadi shabde bhiha. That at both the time of dream of sleep and at the time of the jiva's liberation from the material world, the jiva and the Brahman are different.
Didn't we establish that they're one at that time? Because when the jiva is in dreamless sleep, we say that when she experiences Brahman, becomes one in quality.
Yes, but still there's individuality. It's just which one you want to bring out at the time.
Because they talk about here oneness and difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be logical to point those ones as oneness and difference in size and abilities.
No, but still, even they're situated in that one quality, they're still different. You know, it's just like, let's say, all the living entities in the spiritual world are situated on the transcendental platform. So in that way, there's oneness with the Lord. But it's still an individual within that oneness. That there's a difference. Otherwise, how do you appreciate the situation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, the oneness, it only has a flavor because there's a difference.
Yes.
And the difference only has a flavor because there's oneness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if there's not something common between two people, how do they interact?
Yes.
But there's a common point, unless they're two people, how do they appreciate the common point? So it's just a matter of which side you need to bring out at the time. So even the same, just like we'll see it when we get into the Sandarbhas, we see it occasionally now, but like Jiva Goswami, it's not uncommon that in the same purport, he'll quote the same shloka in two different ways. You know, as he's giving the explanations, if there's many explanations, you know, like in Prabhupada's long purports, then even paragraph is a different aspect. So even though it's the Udaharana, it's giving out so many different aspects of it because it's such an important verse. You know, there's so many details to bring out. So he may, in those different sections, quote the same verse and take a different angle. And then in the next purport, he'll quote it again and even another way. So, like that, then the principle is always the same. That's the point. Krishna is non-dual, so that oneness is there. But at the same time, it's because of this expansion of his energies, and there's unlimited variety there. So that the ability to be able to catch the conceptual aspect, what's the primary, and then from there, then see the secondary in relationship to that, that then gives a very clear understanding. Right? But if we take it that the primary, and then it's expressed with the secondary, but we don't really see the secondary based on the primary, then we start to analyze the secondary, then we may get confused. Does that make sense? That's what Prabhupada is saying, is that the pure devotees, they don't see the material world that the materialist sees. What they see it in connection with Krishna. So it has a different flavor. That's the Shastra Chakshus. You see through the eyes of Scripture. So you're seeing it differently than others. Even though the senses are perceiving the same thing, but how it's being interpreted in the mind, that's different. Because the mind isn't looking for sense gratification, it's looking for service to Krishna, so therefore how Krishna is there. So you can see his energies and you can see the energetic. Does that make sense? They're always there. That's the point, is that's why we say Brahman has energies. So even though it's impersonal, it's still this unlimited variety within the unchangeable. It means he doesn't change. And the principles on which his energies transform don't change. But what will be manifest is different. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say that we have the flower. So then the feminine nature is the variety that's there. You know, the different petals, you know, the different colors that are there, the shapes, you know, how each petal is a different shape. And how each flower is, even though it has that kind of general point of being a flower and being this particular kind of flower, it's still, each one is different from the other in the colors and everything like that. But it's still within a category that you will... So you have varieties of categories, and within that category there's unlimited variety. Right? So that's the feminine aspect that's there. Does that make sense? But now the masculine aspect is the that beauty of it. You know, that's why it's there, or the smell of it. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that's what makes the flower important, is that aspect. Does that make sense? So any of the feminine aspects that you take, they're founded on the masculine aspect. So then you can look at it either way, as how this is Krishna or how this is his energy. But the point is that Krishna is non-different from his energy, the energy is non-different from him. It's just which aspect you're bringing out at the time. Does that make sense? So then, like that, then it's just a matter of, in the discussion, which one you're bringing out. Does that make sense? So then you start to see is that there's the patterns that are there, the formulas that are used, and then you can always see them back to that. But the aspect that's there, there may be so many varieties of definitions. Like if you have Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, and that's what the Veda talks about, then that means everything in the Veda has to fit into those three. And so since there's so much variety in the Veda, that means all that variety of Veda fits into those three. Does that make sense? So that's where, if you see that, then you start to work back into analyzation of the detail that's there. Then it's easier to grasp, easier to understand, easier to see the connection between one thing and another. But if we simply take the secondary, and then we'll go, well, this is different from that. You know, it's just like, okay, we have this flower, and we have this flower. Now we can say they're totally different. There's no connection. There's nothing in this and that. This is a champa. This is, I'm not even sure what this is. But then, oh, this is off the gulab fool tree. What? Gulab jamun. Yeah, tree. You ever had a gulab jamun fool? No? Anyone's had?
Peru.
Huh?
Jamun fruit?
Not gulab.
No.
Jamun tree.
No, no, this is gulab jamun.
It's gulab jamun.
This is flowers gulab jamun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Never heard.
Yeah, see? That's what I'm talking about. It's a little round fruit. You never see them here because either the birds or the laborers get them. I'm not sure what it is. It's mysterious. Every year there's more and more of them, but you never see one. So I'm not sure what happens. So. It's a little round fruit. It's kind of like, you know, it's firm, but it's, you know, soft, but not soft. You know, it's quite firm. And then inside it has a seed that's loose, so it rattles. Mm-hmm. It's really funny. Like that, but if you open it, take out the seed. But the it's kind of like that the flesh part of the fruit. It actually tastes like rose. Therefore, it's a jamun, but it's a gulab jamun. And then the other one, the other tree over there, that's like it looks like the Italian tree. You know, the Pisa tree. Yeah, that's a kalo jamun. It's a jamun, but it's black. You know, so that's astringent. This gulab jamun is... You know about gulab jamun. Yeah, he's one of the ones why I never see them, right? You know. We used to have this what was it called? Star fruit? Remember those back by the kitchen? Star fruit. What are they called?
They're called star fruit only.
No, but in Bengali. They're kind of long. They're kind of like, they're kind of the same color like a, oh man, icicle fruit. Yeah, we're not getting it. But back by the tree, there were ones. They were long, and they looked like the five points long. But along the length of it, then there's these ridges.
Yellow.
It gets a little bit yellowish. It's kind of a clear. Slightly clear, whitish, little greenish, turns a little yellowish. They're sour, you make chutney out of them. Huh? Not sure if it's no, because that's the strength, because this is a fruit, you can eat it like it is. The chalta, then you have to cut it and everything. But whatever it is, that one also you'd never see the fruits, because the boys would all eat them all. As soon as they would get ripe. You know. I think that's the thing about what kids... It's considered inauspicious to have fruit trees in the same place where kids live. They have to be in another area. Because one is that, you know, the kid's just going and harassing the tree and taking everything. But two is that they love sour. So the fruits never ripen. You know, they'll pick them green. Like the adults wait for them to ripen, so then there's another, but they'll know they won't. Okay, so now one could say is they have nothing in common. Different kinds of trees. One's all white with these little fluffy things on the end, or like that. And this one is you know, red and yellow and all that, and a completely different shape. This has more petals, so there's nothing in common at all. But then, if you take it, no, they're flowers. So therefore, then the shape of them, the aesthetics of them, the beauty of them, the fragrance of them, you know, and their use in the deity worship has the same function. So you find what's common. Then you understand, oh, there's varieties in flowers. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that whenever one doesn't see something at the point that you're looking, because there's a difference, you have to go back, one step back. And then see, okay, well, how do these categorize? What's the common point of categorization? Right? So that's what's important, because the Shastra says that's the way it is. You have to do that. Not because, oh, it doesn't make sense to me on this point, so therefore the Shastra's wrong.
Can you say that the masculine would be the general categorization and feminine would be the specific?
Yes. Like that. It would be the general... Is the basis of the specific. Yeah. Means is that, let's say you have aesthetics. That would be in this case the masculine aspect. Okay, now how many things you can find aesthetics in? Right, yeah, so that's the point. There's the variety in the feminine. One masculine thing, so much variety in feminine. Right? And then if you go into a detail of the aesthetics, then, you know, then you'll get that the aesthetic. Yeah, basically it comes down to the principle that we were talking before, the aestheticness and the aesthetic hood. Right? So the aestheticness is just what makes it aesthetic. You know, the principles that are there. And the aesthetic hood is the manifestation of those principles so that they're visible and you can appreciate them and the variety that comes up from that. So, yeah. So that's like you see childness. Then that, in this case, you have a child. That will be the impersonal aspect because that's just a generic thing that, that they're functioning on. The childhood will be the actual child itself and the manifestation of the childless. Mm-hmm. You understand? Okay. Okay. In this latter work, the Sutrakar clarifies the concept of oneness in Vedanta Sutra 2341. Amso nana vyaparishad anyata chapi dasa kritava dvitvam aditya ak. Herein he confirms that the jiva is a part of the Lord because of scriptural statements. Other statements giving description of oneness of jiva and the Lord are taught, but they do not indicate absolute oneness because one who is the creator, Lord, cannot be the created, jiva, or one who is the pervader, Lord, cannot be the pervaded, jiva. However, the Lord is an exception to this rule. Since it was proved early in Vedanta Sutra 1426, Atma Krite Parinamata, that the Lord is the agent, creator, and the object acted upon, created. The Lord is the pervader and pervaded. This does not apply to the minuscule jiva, right? Because they're not. Does that make sense? They're not both of those. The Lord is both, because otherwise there has to be a basis for something. And the maintainer has to be the one who's providing the facility. Right? Just like, let's say, someone's maintaining a project. So who's producing the money? Project or the person who's maintaining it. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that so Krishna's creating the energies that are that he is the source of these energies, and then but because they're non-different from him, because he's a non-dual substance, there is nothing else but him, so it is him and it'll have the same kind of nature as him because of the cause and effect, but still one is the pervader and one is the pervaded. Does that make sense? So even though it's all one, there's still a difference. That's the important aspect. Yes.
Like Krishna is Supreme Purusha and he has masculine and feminine within himself. So like we say within secondary we have again primary, secondary, like that. So similarly all means all the manifestation, cosmic creation is feminine. It's from Krishna, energy of Krishna.
Right, okay.
And within that energy we have masculine and feminine energy.
Yes, yes. That's the whole point, is that this principle always goes down.
Yeah.
Like that, like just like we say, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Then you'll say, well, how does everything fit into that? It's only three categories, because each category can be divided by that three. And then that division could be divided by three. And that way you can just keep on going. That way you get unlimited. That's the scientific aspect of it. Right? And that's, you know, so it's mathematical. And then in that mathematical, then there'll be wherever's repetition that you take out. Unless it's a reverse, and then it has a different flavor. Is that something?
Like Manu Samhita, 7th chapter, about 10th verse. Danda is energy of the Lord, but he is classified as male.
Danda.
Yeah, punishment.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Yeah, because it takes on that flavor. So that's the whole point, is that it's just a matter of which one you're looking at. We look at it, the material world, as Krishna's energy. We also look at it that it's Krishna's, the universal form. So that way you get both. Both are there. So when that's accepted, then it's a matter of, depending upon what's being accomplished, that's where you look at one or the other. Because whenever you look at one, the other one is always there, but it's just a matter of which is the main. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
What is their rationale for the Jivatma's consciousness also pervading?
how are they rationalizing? Because it's beyond common sense. It creates, we can understand Krishna creates everything, it's not. But how can they even, with common sense, say that the Jivatma's consciousness pervades this pillar also?
Well, that's the problem, is that it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when they come up with the nothingness. You know, it's just like in the modern context, if you defeat someone in an argument, then they take the position of being the victim and how you are, you know, oppressing them by this, you know, by defeating their bogus argument that they were so in your face presenting, right, you know. And so they go back to that they're the victim, or you don't care, or, you know, like that, some kind of emotional state. So here in the philosophical, when that happens, then they go into voidism. Because if there's nothing, then there's nothing to argue. Right? Is it? If you ain't got nothing, you ain't got nothing to lose. Right? Yeah. So that seems to be their end game there. So it's the same thing, is that on the material they'll always go back into something. You know, and depending upon what works for them, then it'll switch around. Because the point is in the material, the logic is only there as long as it to support the enjoyment. So as long as you end up as the controller enjoyer, then you will consider it a logical progression. But when we come up with the idea that you're not the controller and enjoyer, then that's when they'll start to argue that, oh, this is not logical, this is this, because this is what they want. That means not logical, means your logical steps don't make me the controller and enjoyer. Right? Not that what you're saying is not logically presented. It just doesn't, its conclusion isn't I'm the controller and enjoyer. Therefore, it's not logical, because logical is supposed to come to a conclusion, and the conclusion is supposed to be I'm the controller and enjoyer. So in that way, then, it's improper logic. So,
when you say about masculine, feminine, so like even in Sanskrit we have, you know, masculine, feminine, neuter as a gender. So then even in this creation, do we have something like that? Masculine, feminine, something called as neuter?
That's the Sandhi. Yeah, because it's not one, it's not the other. Why do you call something neuter?
Yeah, that's
right. It's not one or the other.
Yeah.
Of that. But here it just basically means neuter, means it's generic, so it can be used in either. So it's not that it can carry either flavor.
That means Tatastha Shakti is kind of neuter, because, you know, it is.
Yeah, so they can carry either internal or external.
Mm-hmm.
They can work for
mm-hmm.
the object or the subject,
mm-hmm.
because they're connected with the verb.
Yes.
Instrumental is connected to the verb,
yes.
No?
Mm-hmm.
So that means they can either be working on either one, the subject's or the object's behalf.
Yes.
So for that way, when you're talking about action or application, that's the meaning of masculine and feminine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Is that? Okay, thus the Sutrakar establishes the philosophy of Chintabheda Veda. Summary of Adhikarna 6, Vishaya. The idea that all religious beliefs are somehow correct, at least for the believer, is another sentimental attachment that must be rejected to make real spiritual progress. Because, yes, that's the whole point of illusion, is that whatever you are attached to, it's real for you. And so we're not saying that that's not a factual position. We're just saying that it's not a position in which you can make real spiritual progress. Right? Because you think this is important when it's, and what's the basis for that? It's because there's some connection to I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's why it's important. But if we look at it, I'm the servant of the Lord, then it's not important. So maintaining that attachment will stop our progress. Something? Or? No? Okay. Actually, it is a vestige of impersonalism. For all non-Vedic theories try to remove the Lord from the central stage of creation and diminish his importance, right? Because what's the advantage of diminishing, either removing him or diminishing him? What's the advantage?
I can be.
Yes, I'm the controller of the child, right? So even those who are religious, believe in God, go to church, pray to God, and all that kind of jazz, then The problem is that if they have that deistic aspect to their philosophy, then God's at a distance. So that means since he's at a distance, we have to control the material world. We make the decisions. We make the standards. You know, within a context of some general standards. But we can even redefine what that means. Right? You know, thou shalt not kill means, you know, thou shalt not murder. Right? And then you define, so you've changed kill to murder, and then you even define murder. Murder means as long as it's not our boys. Right? You know, do not steal your neighbor's donkey. That's it's okay as long as he's wrong or he's not one of your group. Right? You know, so it's like, how you say, you know, you have the Americas are there. There's, you know, there's some figures put it at hundreds of millions of people are living there. And then a few guys show up and then take the place over. So, okay, it's not exactly a donkey, even though one of the political parties uses a donkey as their representative aspect. So the point is that they just come and take it, but that's all right because they're not in our religious group, right? If they're in our religious group, then that's another consideration. You know, then it takes on another flavor. You know, like that. You know, how you say Charlemagne? You know, going no, because they were a different religion, right? So it would have been. Yeah, generally it was all that. But then after that, then they fight with each other. You know. But the point is that they keep redefining it. Why? Because God's at a distance. So if God's at a distance, I can keep redefining this. So when it doesn't match, I redefine. That's all. You know, just like here, they're talking about Brahman and this and what's real and all. And then when you defeat that, their argument, then they redefine and it's all nothingness. So it's just the definitions just match what works for their position to establish them as the controller and enjoyer. So all the six schools then that, you know, have to remove God to some degree and in some way from what's there. You know, because if he's not a person, then you as a person can make decisions. Yes.
Would it be in the category of misdevotion or just essay?
It means it generally in here is you have in this categorization is you would take agnostics as those who accept the Vedic version and atheists as those who don't, right? So, but the principle is that it's not in pursuance of it's not it may be conscious of the Lord. But it's not favorable, and it's not free from karma and jnana. Right? And it's not constant. It's only when you need, when there's a problem, or, you know, when either there's a problem, so then you turn to God, or by bringing God into the equation, it would be more efficient for you getting things done. Like when I do something, I don't bring God into it. But if others are doing something I don't like, I bring God into it if it'll get them to do what I want. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty. There's always this, as it says, vestige of impersonalism. That's always that point, is that you take it into generic quality. So now if we're talking, let's say, the modern kind of tendency, you know, of putting an emphasis on good qualities, which is not a bad thing. You know, good qualities are necessary because when you do have knowledge and have a skill, the application of it through proper qualities is what's going to make for the culture. Right? That's the difference. If I use good qualities in my application or I don't, so then. Is the good qualities a matter of action, or is the good qualities a matter of a situation? You understand? So I'm going to shift that. Talking about myself, I want a situation in which everybody acts according to good qualities. Right? But I don't have to act according with good qualities. And if you point that out, I'm the victim. right? And if you're doing something that I don't like, I'll point out the good qualities, because you acting in good qualities creates a favorable situation for me, who may or may not have good qualities, to function. You understand? So they're glorifying the qualities, but the point is qualities are impersonal. So they'll say we're not just going by knowledge and skill, which is just, you know, dry, you know, knowledge and like this, science. But we're taking it into that juicy realm of qualities. But they don't understand this is juicy because it's connected to the Lord in the form of Brahman. But the point is it's still not personal. Everyone should be nice. It sounds very good because it's connected to Brahman. But it's still impersonal. So this modern philosophies, even though they claim to be that they're the real personal thing, they care about the individual and this and that, ultimately what they mean is they care about themselves as an individual. And if you are in a common category as themselves, then they can extend that to you. That's extended sense gratification. In other words, I care about my sense gratification, but I'm willing to work and cooperate with others that I feel that they have a common platform. Does that make sense? So that kind of approach is impersonal. Though it's presented, though, it's personal. Like we say, oh, just surrender. Oh, that's so impersonal. You know, I said just surrender. So that's a generic, but it's an active case. Right? It's active, not passive. No, but we should just be nice and we should be good. And those are impersonal, but now passive. Does that make sense? So when I present the passive, means everybody else should do it. Active is what I'm going to do. You know what I'm saying? So has that self-centered. And so then they have that belief that this is good. But they're not understanding is how far their belief, what's the basis of their belief. That's why unless you base it in Krishna consciousness, as defined by Rupa Goswami, or pure devotion, then all these anomalies will come up at all these points. You know, it's not, if you're not conscious of the Lord, it's definitely material. So it's just karma and jnana. Right? And if you're not at least conscious of the God and the way of His laws, then you won't be able to develop community and all those kind of things. But unless you see it as the proper position of the laws coming from authority, rather than there's laws and we deal with them how we want, then it becomes scientific. Then you can actually work together nicely. And the actual piety is the main thing. So it's not... Does that make sense? So this way you can build it up on the levels of consciousness of being aware of the Lord. Right? But the problem is you have all these levels. Right? So when you're aware of Him as Bhagavan, that will give your highest result. Then, being aware of Him, then it should be favorable to Him. Otherwise, it's always about yourself. You're aware of God, but it's always about what He's going to do for you. Right, and how everybody else should fit into God's law, so it's good for me. Right, so when it's favorable to Krishna, that means it's about Krishna, not about us. Right, it means we're going to interact with Krishna because He's a person, we're a person. We're going to interact according to our nature. But the point is so that's where the individuality comes in. Is that I'm functioning according to my nature, but it's about Krishna. What will be pleasing to Him, how to use my nature to please Krishna. So it gets both. You know? Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's about the law, but it's about my position within the law. Does that make sense? So it has all the aspects. Well, the liberal would look at it, it's about me as an individual. While the conservative look at it, no, it's the law. It's the law, so individuality can be sacrificed. And then for the liberals, no, it's about individuality. The law can be sacrificed. But in the Vedic version is no. It means based on the law, you as an individual fit within that and function within that. So it includes both. Does that make sense? So to do that, you have to go beyond to that religious belief which you think is correct, but you're not actually seeing it in line with the actual Vedic authority and in line with what the Acharyas are giving. So without that connection with the Parampara, you won't actually know what's favorable and how to balance that and what is actually being conscious of the Lord. Right? And how to, and then free from karma. And jnana means that you're not trying to get something from it. Even it is favorable to Krishna. Like you do something for somebody that is favorable to them. They like it. But you're still doing it for your own motive. Right? So it's service, but it's not pure. So you have to have all these aspects. So we see in the philosophy, in the Vedanta Sutra, all it's doing is removing all those obstacles. And what will be left? Pure devotional service. So that's all it's doing. It's just showing us how to identify what's pure and what's not. And we can see the path that it's running. Right? Because if you... Yeah. Okay. Vedanta Sutra is very clear about its rejection of other theories and sole support of the Vedic version. This is because of all the systems of knowledge in the world, only the Vedas are of divine origin. All others are unapologetically originated by defective human intelligence. Right, and unapologetically, yeah. They're proud of it. That's the whole point. This R.R.R. Acharya wrote this. How can you quote Vedas against him? Right? So you have to change the Veda for him. You know. Therefore, following the example of Vedanta Sutra, no authentic self-realized soul will accept such faulty, erroneous, nonsensical, and spiritually crippling theories. Okay, Shamshaya. Brahman is the possessor of subtle Shakti. Brahman, as the possessor of subtle Shakti, is the material cause, and as the possessor of gross Shakti, is the effect. Is this true or not? Right, so we see here is even though it's the Shamshaya, it's the doubt, they're able to grasp what was the point that the other made. This shows a superior position in discussion. When you speak and the other person doesn't even care what you're saying or can't understand what you're saying, it won't be a good discussion. But here they understand you're saying this point. Is that correct? Yes. So now the doubt is this true or not? So what does that mean? It's just a cultured way of saying it's not. Because if it was true, why would you bring it up? Then it would be a matter of, in the presentation, there's some aspect that you don't understand, you know, how it, to understand it or how to apply it. Right? In either aspect of manana. That's how you understand where doubts are. You've heard, but now, in thinking about it, you're going to apply it. So either I don't understand the connections within it, within that theory, or I don't understand how that theory applies practically. That creates a doubt. Right? So that's then what we're talking about. This is not that. This is they just don't think it's right.
This particular point, whatever is assumption, was earlier proof for the Sutrakar, you know. Like this is what it is really, is the fact. But still, you know, they bring the same point again. And now, like, can you say that it has been from a different perspective? It's been explained over here? Because
yeah, they're just taking a different angle. It's just like you keep taking different angles until you find one that works. That's what you do. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, both parties are doing that. One's based on Siddhanta, the other's not. And so then... So you just keep taking different angles. Otherwise, why do you need, you know, such a voluminous work to discuss these things unless they have so many angles that they'll try desperately to establish their philosophy from?
Is it that, you know, we're supposed to go through all the angles in order to establish our conclusion?
No, we establish our conclusion with each angle. So it's not that we're dependent upon them, that only when we removed all those doubts, then our philosophy shines forth. No, it already shines forth. It's just that these things, these other philosophies aren't understanding it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like that. Yeah. So then, because they keep going at it, then you can see there's a misgiving. Because if there's a doubt, once you clear that doubt on that point, then it would be clear. But because it keeps on going, that means there's a misgiving. So there's an attachment. Because the doubt means it's intellectual. A misgiving means it's emotional. Does that make sense? That's the difference.
Maharaj, we spoke that those questions are the questions of manana, when you contemplate and then don't understand how it applies.
Yes.
Then there are intellectual things that you don't understand the connection between things.
Yeah, just how the mechanics unfold.
And then there are questions out of curiosity. They don't fall into none of those.
It can be either one, but it's not like you're committed to using it.
No,
right, because
information.
Yes, so that's why in this kind of forum, that's not very desirable. It means you can have forums for that. Okay. You know, you have like a question answer that anyone can bring up anything. Then you can address those kind of questions, because you explain them though according to how to properly understand it to use it. And so those who see the practical and all that, they'll get the benefit, though the person who just likes intellectually playing with things, they won't. You know, it'll be fun for them. But by that association, then at some point, by hearing about the Supreme Absolute Truth, they'll get purified. So at one point, their purified heart may be able to take up a more serious position. Okay, Purva Paksha. Because of oneness of Brahman with the Jiva, Bhoktri, there is no distinction between them, Avibhagaha, since there's non-difference between the Shakti and the possessor of Shakti, Brahman. Right? Because you're saying there's non-difference, so then you're saying there's non-difference of the Jiva, but the canon understand is that there's a non-difference and difference. Because they're pushing the point, whenever they say it's different, we'll say no, it's one. When they're saying it's one, we'll say it's different. But the point is that it's both. Right? Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva addresses the Bhava as follows. 2-2-1-13. Bhokturi apater avibhagas chait shyau lokavat. Bhoktra, with the enjoyer, apatehe, from becoming, avibhagaha, non-distinction, chet, if, syat, it may be, lokavat, as in the world. If one argues that because the jiva as shakti is non-different from Brahman, there will be no distinction seen between them at all. This argument is rejected. Distinction in oneness is seen in the ordinary world. Sutra Prakashita. The Sutrakar cites one example of difference and another example of difference in oneness to prove the inequality between the Lord and the Jiva. In his earlier work, the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 1.2.11-12, Guham Pravishtav Atmanau Hi Tad Darshanat. And Visheshanach Cha demonstrated that the two beings in the space within the heart are the Jiva and the Lord. Hence, the Lord is the person accompanying the Jiva because of distinctive qualities. Right? So, he's already established this point before. But, the point is as you move in the discussion, they'll come up with something new as if it's something new, and completely therefore, because it's new, they ignore all your previous arguments. So, it's not like there's a progress going on there. Right? We're going through a progress, but they're not. So that's the point, he said. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. That proposition would make meaningless the difference expressed in Shruti in passages such as the following. Vasuparana jushtam yada pashyat yanyam isham. There are two birds in a tree. When one bird sees the other, the Lord. Right. So therefore this proposition is not correct. Right, because the Veda is saying there are two birds in a tree. It doesn't say that there's one bird in a tree. There used to be two, and now there's one. Right, like that. This should be rejected, syat, from what we see in ordinary life, lokavat, in the world. Though we make no distinction between a man holding a stick and that very person, there is difference essentially between the stick and the man, right? We see the man with the stick, so you see it as one thing, right? So, but at the same time, is you can tell the difference between the man and the stick. Similarly, though Brahman is non-different from its Shakti, there is an essential difference between the Shakti and Brahman. There is no harm in this. Because everything you can take, you have your face, but you can tell on your face there's a nose. But you can still, there's oneness and there's difference. That's the whole point. It's this always is going on. So you see it in everyday life. So if the philosophy is understood, you can see like this all the time. It's not a problem. Does that make sense? So that simplicity of that, that's why then someone who knows Krishna knows everything. And someone who's situated on that in a constant manner, you know, it means in other words, the Uttama Bhakta. That's why you can't defeat them in an argument, because the person who's arguing, then they will be based on the modes of nature, and they will have imperfect senses, make mistakes, cheating, and
illusion.
Illusion, yes. So they'll have these positions, so they'll always be wrong, while the other is seeing it as it is. And because the principles of Krishna consciousness are so straightforward and simple, even if someone doesn't know so much, he can still deal in that. Does that make sense? So for someone who's looking for the absolute truth, then dealing even in that simple way, then one will be convinced, because one is looking for. Right? But now if someone is very technically knowledgeable and very proud of that, identifies with that, and only likes to discuss on that level, then you may not know that technical points because you haven't applied it and it's not your interest. So therefore, then in that case, you would not be, you would not see yourself as the person to discuss with them. Right? Not that you don't know, you're not situated. Does that make sense? This explains the position of Kashi Mishra. Right? You know, in this way, in that category of third class devotee. Simply because he's a pure devotee, right? He's an associate of the Lord, but he just hasn't applied himself into these areas and is not interested. It's not part of his need in his service to Lord Chaitanya. Right? So those who are in that capacity where they function in these ways, it's the same. So we see that also in the Jiva Dharma. The Babaji's at Navadvipa, not that they can't explain it, they'll go through. But the point is when you're dealing with scholars, they want to hear things in a very scholarly way. That's the only way they think it's real. Therefore, they ask Vaishnav Das, then he should discuss with them. Because he being, you know, a Sanskritist, a Vedantist, you know, a renunciate, all these things, then he can deal in all these and quote all the Shastras that they want to hear and all that. He already, you know, won up them by saying, are we talking in Sanskrit or in Bengali? You know? And so they said Bengali. So that means the option is that he could speak in Sanskrit, otherwise why would he bring it up? You know, they're scholars. They're coming to discuss Shastra. So are we discussing this in Sanskrit? Like amongst the big great scholars in India, they do. Right? Because if you, let's say you have somebody from Varanasi, and he's going to, discuss with somebody from Kanchi or something, then that means what are they going to discuss in?
Sanskrit.
Sanskrit, right? Because otherwise they don't have a common language. Right? Does that make sense? But Sanskrit, then that's the common thing. Like I remember it was one of the Shankaracharyas? Was it? No. Yeah, I don't remember if it was a Shankaracharya Madhvat, like that, but whatever, they were one of the Acharyas. And so when they were in North India preaching, you know, they only know South Indian languages, and the commonality is it's not the same kind of Prakrit. It's a difference. It's the derivative of Paisach. So it's a different branch of Sanskrit derivative. Well, the North Indian languages, they're from what we call Prakrit, right? So I think there's three different groups. So then they don't have anything common to work from, right? So then when he went into the North and gave classes, he would just speak in Sanskrit. And so since everyone in Norse speaks in a derivative of Sanskrit, you know, depending upon, you know, if they spoke a language other than Hindi, you know, they'd get 80-85% of what he was saying. They spoke Hindi, and then they're in more of a problem. You know, because that's only like 60% Sanskrit. Is that, you know? So, like this. So he's taking that position. So by speaking in that way, he already has already thrown them off their game because they, oh, you know, he's such a big scholar and all that. And so that's the whole point. While the Babaji, they'll think, oh, he's here, he's uneducated, we're big pundits, we're Brahmins, we know everything. Anything he says, you know, it's like I don't know if any of you had the experience, I've had it so many times. You'll come up to somebody, like in Calcutta or in the village, and start speaking in Bengali. And because you're a Westerner, then they answer back in Bengali, I don't know English. And then you have to tell them, no, I'm speaking in Bengali. And then they go, oh, then it's okay. You know, yeah, okay. So like that. So they just take it. No, they're Babaji's. What do they know? We're pundits. We're Brahmins. We know everything. So that's why then in occasions, even though it's not so important, the Vaishnavs can make this kind of distinction. Because they'll listen to them, yes, so then they should speak. Like that. So it's not that the Babaji's there couldn't discuss these points and answer them. It's just that the Shantipur Brahmins wouldn't accept. Therefore, you have a Varanasi Brahmin and Sannyasi, have him speak, they can't complain. You know, it's just like, you know, it's just, you don't do that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, like that, then you make these distinctions and you'll use them according to what's going to best bring out the aspect of Krishna that the person would understand. Because there's unlimited aspects of Krishna, which one you want to use for the situation. If one doesn't work, you try another. You keep trying until it finally makes sense to them. So that's the endeavor, that just like the teacher is making the endeavor to find the right explanation, the student is they're trying to actually understand it. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, it's a medium for understanding so you can apply Krishna consciousness. It's not a medium for, you know, social discussion or... Does that make sense? Yeah?
That's sometime when Prabhupada disciples came in somewhere in Gujarat or somewhere, let's say. So they all Indians came. So Prabhupada calls Yamuna Mataji and asked to recite Ishopanishad verses.
Mm-hmm.
So she recites first verse, second verse, third verse, like that. After that, okay, enough, you know everything. If you know these things, you know everything.
Yes, yes.
Then everyone got choked.
Yeah. That's the point. Is if you just, it's not that, it means people do it out of pride. We do it just because then they take it that you're authorized. You know, like with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, those that had degrees, you know, whether they were outside degrees of their or their own degrees, they would put the letters after the name. You know, if they were doing preaching to like the British or to the aristocratic, you know, Bengalis and that, who valued the modern education and modern culture, by putting that, then they go, oh, you know, like this, and then okay, he's someone I could listen to. So that's just, it's just something that's used, but otherwise it's not so important.
And Raghunath Maharaj told only to Radhesham Prabhu to use your IIT, this M.Tech, so that, because he is from South India, from Brahmin family.
Yeah.
Not to anyone. Only for one person to use that IIT degree after his name.
Yeah, because otherwise, that if the area you're working, they value it, you put it. But if not, who cares? Because that's not what makes you a devotee. That's what's important to understand, is that material knowledge and skills is not what makes one a devotee. So here is that they're trying to establish themselves as the supreme. And because of that, then they will be the benefactor of all this. Rather than that they are junior or part and parcel of, therefore they have a natural junior position and servitor position. So to avoid that, you have to avoid God. So then they'll try in so many ways to avoid. Is that true? So So it's just a matter of seeing where are they trying to avoid. So the secondary is just a clue. The best is that you see, okay, they're using a secondary example. What's the primary position that's weak? And so then you'll know how to deal, and then you keep analyzing that as you go. So then if you see that common pattern, or you see that whatever's the combination of what they use, then you know how to discuss. But if you simply argue over the point, it can go so many directions. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's the difficulty. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16, 9-11. The living entity is eternal and imperishable because he actually has no beginning and no end. He never takes birth or dies. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies. Yet he does not belong to the bodily category. Right? He's the basis of it, means according to his desire and the work that he's done with that desire, then he gets awarded a body that's appropriate for that mentality, that consciousness. So he's, in that way, you can see is he's the principle of all types of basic principle of all types of body. The basic, but the technical is the Lord. Right? But he does not belong to the bodily category. The living entity is so sublime that he is equal in quality to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, because he is extremely small, he is prone to be illusioned by the external energy. And thus he creates various bodies for himself according to his different desires. For this living entity, no one is dear, nor is anyone unfavorable. He makes no distinction between that which is his own and that which belongs to anyone else. He is one without a second. In other words, he is not affected by friends and enemies, well-wishers or mischief-mongers. He is only an observer, a witness of the different qualities of men. The Supreme Lord, Atma, the creator of cause and effect, does not accept the happiness and distress that results from fruitive actions. He is completely independent of having to accept a material body. Because he has no material body, he is always neutral. Right? It's only when you have a material body, that's when you categorize what's favorable and what's unfavorable. Does that make sense? You know, us and them, all this comes from based on your body. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like that joke that you had the Lone Ranger and Tonto. You know, Tonto was an Indian who somehow or another was a sidekick of the Lone Ranger. At least that's the American culture presents it. You know, I'm not sure how the local Indian culture would have perceived it. So then suddenly they're surrounded by a huge, you know, the whole tribe of the Indian warriors, and they seem to be not friendly. So the Lone Ranger turns to Tonto and asks, Tonto, what are we going to do now? And he replies, what do you mean, we, white man? You know, so it makes it just, you know, when you get yourself into trouble with his own people, then, you know, you're on your own. But if you just want to get around and find places and that, then he's there to help. You know, like that, so it's because of a body, that's why we define these things. Right? So he doesn't have a material body as a spiritual body, therefore he doesn't define anything about us and them on the material platform. He has no connection with that. Right? It's his energies that make all these things, but it's not that he has any direct connection or it has any effect on him. Right? Because it's not actually the living entity, so you're not worried about it. Does that make sense? It's just like the person with a bad dream, he's affected by it. The other people that he tells the dream to are unaffected by the dream. They may be affected by that he's affected, but not affected by the dream. So, yeah. The living entities, being part and parcel of the Lord, possesses qualities in a minute quantity. Therefore, one should not be affected by lamentation. Just as he's not, we should not be. We can be, because of our smallness, but we take shelter of the Lord and the internal potency, then we're not. So the problem comes when because of our smallness, we can be influenced by the external energy. Right? But if we don't, we take shelter of the Lord, then we're working under the internal, then we don't have any of these problems. Right? Footnote 18. Srila Prabhupada explains the perfect import to the word udasina, neutral, by which one is unaffected by lamentation. The conditioned soul has friends and enemies. He is affected by the good qualities and the faults of his position. The Supreme Lord, however, is always transcendental. Because he is the Ishwar, the Supreme Controller, he is not affected by duality. It may therefore be said that he sits in the core of everyone's heart as the neutral witness of the causes and effects of one's activities, good and bad. We should also, right, so it's not the core, it means whatever you do in this good and bad, then that's the result you'll get. You do good, you'll get. So even a bad person does something good, he'll get the good result. Right? And if a good person does something bad, he'll get that bad result. Right? But for us, we're affected by these things. So if we say someone's good, even if they do something bad, we'll tend to finesse that. And if a bad person does something good, we don't care. Right? It doesn't make up for all the bad that they've done. Right? Rather than, okay, this is the latest thing he's done, so maybe that means that there's some progress forward. But we'll always give it weight by what we don't appreciate. Does that make sense? Because we're affected by it. But he, being unaffected, then it's just what you do is what you get. Yeah. We should also understand that udasina, neutral, does not mean that he takes no action. Rather, it means that he is not personally affected. Right? Because that's the mistake that we'll make. That's why Prabhupada's addressing it here. Is that as soon as you say, be neutral, then the natural thing that people think is, oh, then nothing happens. So then people won't interact, you won't care, you won't have relationships, you won't have anything. So therefore, we can't accept this part of the philosophy because that will create a neutrality in which no one interacts, and I really want interaction, and so therefore I have to reject this. Right? So this is what we mean by not so strong faith in the Shastras, because it says, then how do we understand this? Now if it's a matter of I accept it, but I have a doubt on whether that means that they're being neutral. And we know that there's Vaishnava etiquette and all the interactions, and Rupa Goswami mentions the favorable activities between Vaishnavas. So how do you perform those if you're neutral, if neutral means that you're, inactive? Does that make sense? So that means then you want to understand. But if it's a matter of an attachment, no, I'm more attached to this, then this says neutral, so I don't accept that because I want people to interact. You understand? So that would be the difference between which is a sincere inquiry and which is an actual misgiving. Right? So,
Maharaj, when you say that with the materialist we should be indifferent, or with some devotees we should be indifferent, that means this, neutral, indifferent.
Indifferent means neutral, means you have nothing to do with them if there's not some actual activity. Means that will be favorable to devotional service.
Okay.
Because you're dealing with them how they deal with you. That's neutral. See, a positive thing, even if they, let's say, they're grumpy, you still deal nicely. But if you're indifferent or neutral, if they're grumpy, then you take a sober position and don't get involved. For example, a court judge is neutral when two opposing parties appear before him, but he still takes action as the case warrants. Right? So that's the point, is that he's neutral, but whichever side's right, that's what wins. To become completely neutral, indifferent to material activities, we should simply seek shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Neutral Person. Because being connected to the neutral person, then that way we can be neutral. Otherwise, we try to be neutral on our own. We're too small to be neutral. Because we will be affected by an energy that's greater than us. So it'll be the internal or the external. So when we take shelter of Krishna, then we can actually be neutral. Right? And then being neutral, that brings us into the out of the material, because the taking positions in the material, that's what causes all our problems. Right? We identify with all the things here, we're attached to all the things here, that creates the problems. But we have the same attachment to Krishna and identifying within, you know, a realm or within a group or like that, then that's all in connection with Krishna, then that creates rasa. In the material platform, yes, you're engaging rasa, but inferior rasa, because it's just about the secondary aspects of either the subtle of the emotions or the secondary, meaning the growth. Right. So, yes.
So Krishna, in his features, Brahman and Paramatma, he's neutral. But then as Bhagavan, you know, because he wants to experience rasa, he's not neutral. We can't really call him neutral in that state.
On one sense, you can say yes, means, but more it would be, is, I would say, the point of Prabhupada says he's active. Because it's not that he has an idea of what mood Mother Jashoda should have. She has that affection or attraction and parental rasa, so he being neutral, he will reciprocate in that. So that's the point, is neutral doesn't mean inactive, just like impersonal doesn't mean non-existence. Like that. So that's the thing, as we're being pointed out here, is that he's neutral, but it doesn't mean he's inactive. Because we take it neutral means you don't care. You know, it's just like the high court judge, or the judge, he's hearing the case, and if he just doesn't care and he makes no decision, that would be neutral. But he makes a decision based on, you know, what's appropriate. Right? So Krishna then, what things he likes, he creates the situations in which those can be expressed and the devotees can interact. But the point is he doesn't do that himself directly. He does that through his energies and through his expansions. So all those things are created, but they're created so that he can take that neutral position. You know, and neutral in that he is, means they take that neutral position, and then therefore he can just be absorbed in the mood that the devotees are interacting or manifesting at the time. And then various tastes he wants to do, then he interacts with them to try to move it in that way. But it has that aspect of his, you know, of the relationship. Does that make sense? So it has both those aspects. So it's not that he doesn't do both, but he takes care of the other side with Balaram. And so then this side is Krishna, then he just enjoys the unfolding of what's happening. Because it's Balaram, it's the super soul. Balaram's the, you know, does that make sense? So that's where you get it. So you get the super soul aspect from Balaram, you get the impersonal aspect from Vasudev. That's where these things come up. It's not that all these aren't in Krishna. It's just that you just see the rasa aspect with Krishna. Then with Balaram, then you see the organizational aspect. And then with Vasudev, you see the existence aspect. Does that make sense? Like that. So, but it doesn't mean that it's all not personal and all has this. This is what we mean by you see these principles at work, because they have all the other things also. We're just looking at it from this so you can see how these things come up. Is that?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
What is the difference between neutral and impartial?
They're the same. They would be synonyms of basically the same principle, of bringing out different aspects. Your neutral would more bring out that your position, you know. And if you're saying, what was the other one? Impartial means you're not going to favor one side or the other in action. So in other words, one's about the passive, one's about the active. Right? But instill, that doesn't mean you don't act and don't give an opinion. Now, the parties may take it that you gave an opinion that supported them, then you're partial. Right? But then if it supported them, then they would say you're impartial. See, he says, that's just correct. Oh, that's being partial. So that's the way the point is what is the correct position? You've done something, what's wrong is wrong, and what's right is right. So you can point that out. So that's why in that position, if you can point out all of that nicely in a pleasant way, then it enhances the interaction between these parties. When you point out is that you have a good point here, and that, you know, you're trying to get, you know, bring out the position of the individuality, about the individuality of the person, and so they should not be neglected in the machinery and in the social machinery. But then there's a fault that you're willing to break authority and break tradition and not follow the Shastra to do that. And so if you do that, then you're just going to get anarchy and you have animals. So you don't even have human life. So human life means accepting the laws of God. So you have a standard to accept by. Then you want to apply that to the individual. Does that make sense? So then you deal with the problems of both parties. Right? Does that make sense? And the other one just wants to establish the rules, because if you don't, then there'll be anarchy, everything will fall apart, you can't organize, then there won't be any progress, and like that. And that's correct, but at the same time, you can't sacrifice the individual in that. It's not our decision to. Like that, because it's what does Shastra say? Does that make sense? Yeah. So being neutral, you can be impartial. You know, it's the same basic
thing. Yes. Here it is mentioned that living entities possesses all the qualities of Lord,
yes,
but in a minute sense.
Yes.
So if Lord is Achyuta, he never falls down from a position. How do we understand that we fall down?
Because the jiva in position actually doesn't. But the consciousness of the jiva does. But actually the jiva is always liberated. But because he's so minute, he comes under control of the energies, while Krishna, being everything, doesn't. Okay?
Yes. It seems to be very difficult to maintain the rasa, dynamic rasa, and remain impartial, because then externally it seems like you don't care, or, you know.
No, but that's the point, is that we're taking it that they don't care, because we're taking impartial as inactive. But impartial doesn't mean inactive. Neutral doesn't mean inactive. It just means that appropriate for the situation. Now, according to one individual, he may see that this is appropriate. But you're seeing from your position whether it's appropriate or not.
Yeah.
So then, therefore, it's not that you're inactive. That's the difficulty, is in the non-Vaishnava definition, impartial means you're inactive. They take it as a neutral state. You're neutral in position, but it doesn't mean that you're neutral in action. It means that you're inactive. Right? You're active in according to what's the situation.
Yeah.
We take it that neutral means doesn't care. Doesn't get involved.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the Swiss option. You know. But what it means is that we deal with the individuals according to how they deal with us. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the point. So it's not that if you go into it in that neutral thing, it doesn't matter what their background is or that. You work on how they're dealing right now. That's also the importance of dealing with an enemy in a pleasant way, is that you're not going by the past, you're going by right now. They're a guest, so therefore you deal with them as a guest. And because you're doing that, then that itself makes it that you're holding on of the grudge doesn't, you know, stand so strong. and them, they're holding on to it, then they may also let it go. You know, so therefore the neutral state is very important for actually having proper relations. We work on the principle, no, we have to be not neutral. That's how we have relationships. But then you come up with, you know, these, you know, we say it's all about, you know, being personal and that, but then we come up with generalizations. Does that make sense? So in our personal application, it's always about everybody else's in a general category. And then you make no distinction. So if you're neutral, you can make distinction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, neutral position seems to be like a strong masculine position, because then you reciprocate according to the situation in presence with the person. But then our nature is different. We find very difficult to do that. You know, we
because there's a servant aspect. If we're servants, then as a servant, then that can be accomplished. That's why we have to function under another energy. So we're either serving Maya and the modes of nature, you know, the senses, or we're serving, you know, the higher principle of the devotees and Krishna. So when we take that on, then that aspect of neutrality is there. That's why it mentions that when the living entity, to become completely neutral, indifferent to material activities, we should simply seek shelter at the lotus feet of the supreme neutral person. So when we take shelter of Krishna through his devotees, that's then when we can act in that neutral position, because it's active still, and it's active, and we're doing something. Right? But we're still neutral in that we're serving. So it's not that we're having to come up with it. We follow what is being given. We follow in the footsteps. Does that make sense? So you just have to see that you're stepping in the right place. Right? Is that okay? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityai Gaura Prema.